Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. We gratefully acknowledge contributions to sustain the Infrastructure Show from Dr. Robert Peskin, Dr. Raymond Ellis, and Andrea and Ron DeFeo. Since 1998, the American Society of Civil Engineers has produced its report card on the condition of the nation's infrastructure, which has helped focus the national dialogue on infrastructure condition and needs. The Infrastructure Show covered the report cards in 2009 and 2017, and now the 2021 version has just been released. And to update us on the state of American infrastructure, we're talking with Emily Feenstra, who's Managing Director of Government Relations and Infrastructure Initiatives for the ASCE. Emily, I'm glad to be talking with you today.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
So give us some background. Give us your description of the infrastructure report card, and then we'll find out what our grades are.
Sure. Well, as you mentioned, we've been releasing the report card every 4 years since 1998, and it should probably come as no surprise the grades haven't been good. But it's just really a snapshot in time of our infrastructure conditions and funding needs. And when I say infrastructure, it goes beyond roads and bridges and transit, but includes, you know, wastewater facilities and drinking water plants, the electric grid, ports and inland waterways, even school facilities we look at. We are up to 17 categories, actually, of infrastructure. So the news this year, we released the report last week, is our nation's infrastructure is at a C-. It's actually the first time in 20 years we've been out of the D's for our overall GPA, but still, you know, I'm a parent. A C- is nothing I'd be happy if my kids brought home from school. We have a lot of work to do. So we're seeing some incremental progress in some areas, but 11 grades still stuck in the D's.
Yeah, so I'd like to go through some of those areas where you've observed the incremental progress. But before I get to that, give us a sense of, so how do you do this? Is this a volunteer effort?
Sure. It's a little bit of both as far as volunteers and staff. So we put together a committee of ASCE members. So these are civil engineers working in communities across the country. They tend to be our senior level folks, but they might work for a public works department or a city government. They run state DOTs. They also work in private sector engineering firms, and they cover all of those categories that I mentioned. And they spend about a year pouring through data sources wherever possible. We try to get federal, publicly available data, information on bridge conditions and transit facilities, and information reported up to EPA on wastewater treatment plants. We look through that federal data, and we have 8 criteria that we're evaluating. So that's things like condition, the capacity of our infrastructure, funding and future need, public safety, of course, and then things like innovation and resilience. And that's how we determine the letter grade. They do have some support from ASCE headquarters in terms of, you know, things that engineers don't love to do on the communication side. We put things with graphic design, we have videos, we try to package it into 2 pages summary or less, which is hard to do on some of these really complex topics. And then we produce the report card that you see on our website.
So no primary data collection, but reliance on readily available data from public sources?
Yes, that is sometimes a misconception people have, that we're going out and inspecting all of the bridges in the country every 4 years. No, because we're doing this national look, we really rely on comprehensive aggregated data sets wherever possible to paint that picture.
So give us the bad news. Tell us how we did. So you said we got out of the D category. What's the current grade?
The grade in 2021 is a C-. So a little bit of an improvement from a D+ in 2017, but still not a great grade. There, as I mentioned, there were a number of categories where the grade went up. Categories like drinking water is up to a C-. Energy, the actual grade went up. Ports is up to a B-. But still, we have 11 out of 17 categories where they're in that D grade range. And that's a lot of our legacy infrastructure. The lowest grade was a D-, and you're failing for transits. And that's just really kind of a testament to the maintenance backlog that they're facing, aging track, aging facilities, not enough revenue, and the pandemic has really kind of exacerbated that trend as we've had really drastic revenue cuts for them as nobody's riding transit right now.
But that's nobody's riding transit. That's short term. I think there was an uptick before we were gifted with COVID-19. So it seems like it's an infrastructure system that's of a real importance, certainly to larger cities. But so transit got a D- because of backlog or because of condition, or is that those two wrapped up together?
Yes, I think, you know, condition and not the level of funding to address these project backlogs. A lot of these older systems in particular just don't have the funding to do the operations and maintenance that they need. We imagine what more we could do with capital expansion. And there's still 45% of Americans that lack access to transit. And transit's so crucial for connecting people to jobs, really to opportunity, that critical we keep transit lines running, we keep them efficient. They don't have this cycle of decline where, you know, they have declining ridership, they have to make more service cuts, and then the system becomes more unreliable. It's almost like a downward cycle that transit is facing.
So any other infrastructure sectors that have done particularly well or particularly poorly?
Well, one thing, you know, we're not grading the agencies or the government entity. We're kind of shining a light on what is out of sight, out of mind for a lot of Americans, and that's the infrastructure below their feet. So in many cases, federal funding has been stagnant. For example, the gas tax hasn't been raised since 1993. You know, can you imagine living off your 1993 salary if you were even working then? You probably wouldn't want to. So we're facing you know, having taken a generation off really from investing in our infrastructure, and our agencies are paying the price and Americans are paying the price. But as far as positive progress, one I would highlight is ports. And while you might not be close to a port, guaranteed the goods on the Target shelf or that Amazon delivery at your door, in some way a port has helped those goods to get there. So it's really critical for our entire nation's commerce. And we've seen some good funding from Congress, some legislative fixes to help make sure that our ports are deep enough, those harbors are deep enough to take bigger ships after the Panama Canal expansion, just really poised to make sure America stays globally competitive and that we're able to keep that supply chain efficient.
I noticed that dams got the grade of D, and I don't recall what the grade was in 2017. Is that stable, or has it gotten better or worse?
Dams is stable at a D, but, you know, of course, we would like to see progress there. And it's an interesting story, of course, what's happened in Michigan, what happened at the Edenville Dam. That kind of shines a light on just the complexity of addressing our nation's dams. And we're finding that there's more and more dams that are going into this high hazard potential category, where you may have had a dam built when it was just protecting farmland, and now you have a housing development there. The risks are much higher if there were a collapse or a dam breach, of loss of property and loss of life, even when there's kind of this encroaching development on dams. And I think what other things that people find surprising about dams is just how many different types of owners there are. You can have a private citizen that owns a dam, a homeowners association, a small city that's never had to deal with an emergency crisis like that. And that's what you saw in some of those small communities affected by the Michigan dam failures. So with all these different owners and a lack of information about their condition, it's just a lot of work to do to make sure people know what to do if there's a dam in their community, that they know about the funding resources available, and that we make additional funding available to help repair and modernize some of these dams.
So if I did look at the 2021 report, and I recall something like 56% of the dams are under private ownership. Do we have condition data on those dams, on really the majority of the dams?
In a lot of cases, we don't. So that is certainly a hurdle to cross, is just completing that inventory of dams. And The other thing that we release with the report card in addition to the grades is we try to calculate what we think the investment need is. And in the dams category, it actually doubled from 4 years ago to today. And that's not necessarily because the condition worsened, but it's just because we're getting that clearer picture as we build out that inventory and inspect more dams. We get a better sense of really the total needs, and they could be daunting.
Yeah, my recollection is that Michigan dams that you referred to were privately owned, which means that we know something less about their condition. What about railroads? Railroads got a good grade. A B in my rubric is that's good. So what data do you have? What information do you have about the condition of the railroads?
Sure. The rail category is interesting because we combine passenger rail and freight rail. So it's really kind of two stories there. Freight rail has been investing in their network for some time, and that kind of helped to bring up the grade to a B. They took advantage of previous economic downturns to invest in their track, to replace track, to do a lot of safety measures. So when we look at the freight rail network overall, it's in pretty good shape. When we look at Amtrak and passenger rail, they are facing maintenance backlogs, funding deficits, and it is a different story there.
So it brings up for me an interesting question, and that is the difference between the condition and performance of private sector infrastructure and public sector and government infrastructure. And it seems like private sector does better. Is that really a matter of funding, or is there something else going on there?
I think that's one conclusion that you could draw. I know it's not always the case, but there's certainly lessons learned from the private sector in terms of just having the funding available to make some of these investments, but also things like asset management. We've seen in the electric grid, for example, where there's a lot of private utilities, they have a really good sense of what condition their lines are in, their transmission lines, where they need to pinpoint repairs or target investments, and where to focus that capital planning. So I think there's some good lessons learned and knowledge transfer sometimes from the private sector that can benefit the public sector, but maybe not so simple as, you know, one does it better than the other.
Yeah, I just wonder if it matters that in the private sector there's somebody in the loop that goes to sleep every night with fiduciary responsibility to pay the bills and to reward the stockholders. There's a kind of a disconnect on the public sector side. That is, it's really easier to walk away from, say, the maintenance needs of a mass transit system than there is from a private freight railroad, where the money you earn tomorrow is dependent on the condition of the infrastructure today.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. And I do think, though, that, again, the public sector doesn't have some of that access to capital that the private sector does. So they might see the list of maintenance needs and just have to make some really tough decisions. We've heard of cases, for example, local transportation agencies where their budgets are so stretched thin, they think about turning roads back to gravel because they just honestly don't have the funds to maintain them. So some different issues at play there. And we think, ASC, we believe strongly that we need to restore that federal partner in infrastructure investment. If you look at kind of the three original core purposes of federal government, one of them was interstate commerce, and we should have a national vision for our infrastructure. States and cities have been raising revenues on their own, going big and bold for many years now. There's been 37 states that have raised their gas tax since 2010, and those elected officials don't get voted out of office. But again, the federal government, that gas tax rate has stayed since 1993 at 18.3 cents.
It is interesting. It appears that at least some state legislators have more courage than members of Congress with respect to raising the fees, if you will. And I'd prefer to call the gas tax a user fee to pay for the use of the resource. I wonder, when I hear your and I read the report card and I hear your description of it, does this suggest or does it open the door for the idea of more movement toward privatization of infrastructure so that you've got management in the loop that has the financial incentive to make systems work and to keep them in good condition?
You know, again, I would say many agree in this country that a core function of government is protecting public health, safety, and welfare, and that's actually the ASC mission. But I think there is a role for government. There are some cases where privatization might make sense, but I wouldn't use it as a blanket approach. I think there's a lot of innovation, a lot of good planning happening in the public sector and in these agencies, and it's just a question of can they get the funding that they need to do some of these capital, you know, five-year plans. There's projects on the books that have been waiting and waiting. And I think you can tap into that innovation in the public sector, and they could be a good anchor. One area where we've seen at least partnerships with the private sector help are when it comes to small water systems. You know, these when you can have eight smaller utilities team up with either a larger central public utility or a private sector partner, they can really gain some efficiencies and get a larger ratepayer base to make some of those improvements that they need to make sure they've got clean, safe drinking water. We've seen some promise in that area.
Does the 2021 report card make any special effort to address what are arguably the hot issues of today? And I'm thinking about climate change, resilience, and especially equity.
That's a great question. The short answer is yes, but they've been things that the industry has been talking about for some time, but I think the conversation has really gone mainstream, and that's great to see. And I'll talk a little bit about resilience. Resilience has always been one of those eight criteria that we use to evaluate each of the categories in our infrastructure report card. But we made a concerted effort to get better data on resilience, you know, what is happening to our nation's bridges, and we're finding that a greater percentage of them are prone to overtopping, which means flooding, or our roads. We're going to see an impact from extreme heat and extreme weather changes on pavement cracking and pavement durability. Wherever we could get data, and again, we're leaning on our federal and state agencies for help there, but the industry is starting to track some of these effects, and then they're pivoting to figure out solutions. And one of the solutions we really tried to highlight, in addition to investment, is just using consensus-based standards. And so what I mean by that is engineers and planners can tell you how to build in a given area to make that infrastructure more resilient. We've got wind loads and tsunami loads and extreme rainfall patterns. We've got that data, and we've got standards in place so that when you build that utility pole in Florida, if you build it to our ASC code, it should withstand that hurricane force wind that's coming more and more frequently. So we tried to point to some of those pragmatic tools that are going to help the resilience equation. We tried to talk more about how infrastructure impacts people, and that some of those decisions that were made many years ago that might have had adverse impacts, we can look at these again and really see as infrastructure investment as a way to lift up communities, to make sure all communities have access to jobs, to opportunity, have good parks and good drinking water, et cetera.
So it's clear that we have the technology. We know how to do these things. Mm-hmm. Is the bottom line that we're not willing to spend the money?
I think that's definitely part of it, that this, at least at the federal level, it's been tough. You know, the wheels always come off when we talk about how to pay for it, and things like user fees are not popular in Congress. So I think there is a unique opportunity. A lot of us in Washington are seeing that, you know, as we come out of this recession, as we look, you know, vaccines are getting rolled out, we're turning the corner there, and we pivot to economic recovery. Infrastructure really should be that way to energize the economy, to get people back to work, to help us create resilient communities. So there is an opportunity there to be more bold and use infrastructure to jumpstart economic recovery.
And I think that the ASCE report card is really important for igniting the dialogue and keeping it going. Do you have any plans for advancing the assessment methodology in the future?
We always take a look at what data we have available, how we can look at those criteria and make it even more robust. And I think each time we've raised the bar a bit. As I mentioned, we added in as much as we could on resilience data that's available. when it came to transportation, I think the conversation has shifted a little bit. We focused less on congestion, which we know will be there, you know, even after the pandemic changes some travel patterns, but really more about travel time reliability. Does it always take you 40 minutes? You know, here in DC to get to work, that might be okay. But if it takes you 40 minutes 4 days a week and then an hour and a half that last day because of a incident on the road, you know, that makes it really tough to plan. So we always look at our methodology each time, make sure we're following where the industry is going and what new data might be there that we haven't looked at in the past, because there are so many jurisdictions and agencies that deal with infrastructure. It's a really complex beast.
Infrastructure is a big problem and a really wonderfully interesting problem. Emily, I'm really glad to have had the opportunity to talk with you today about the 2021 report card. We should all study it, and we're going to count on you and your colleagues to advance this message and help us build a better infrastructure for the nation. Thanks very much for talking with me today.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to be with you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Infrastructure Show. If you enjoyed the conversation as much as we did, please subscribe to our podcast and encourage your friends to join us too. The Infrastructure Show is recorded at the Studio Media Recording Company in Evanston, Illinois, under the direction of Scott Steinman, recording engineer with a commitment to great sound. Our producer is Marion Sowers, a journalist with a passion for infrastructure. And I am Professor Joseph Schoeffer. Few people are more curious about infrastructure than I am.